take your time in getting set up. The next two are consolidated cases, numbers 23-11173 and 23-11196, State of Alabama et al. Versus the United States Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Bowdry.
Morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Barrett Bowdry for Petitioner, State of Alabama. I want to address two of our arguments regarding the text and structure of the Clean Air Act. And the first is how the EPA exceeded its statutory authority by using non-statutory political judgments to grade and deny Alabama's state implementation plan.
Can we talk first about the venue issue?
Yes, sir.
I don't know if you've divided that between the two of you, but
yes, sir.
There is an issue we want to discuss.
Yes, sir. I'll address the venue provision and go straight there. I think the general way to understand the venue provision is that Congress says any sort of one-size-fits-all agency action goes to the D.C. Circuit, and any local or regional application that turns on state-specific actions or facts go to the local circuit. And here...
With the caveat, of course, that if it's based on a determination of nationwide scope or effect, then it goes to the D.C. Circuit if there's a finding, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you don't dispute, or maybe, I don't know, I should ask you, do you dispute that it requires only a single determination of nationwide scope or effect as a textual matter?
I don't dispute that you just have to have one determination, but I think what a determination is very important.
Yeah, so, but just so I'm clear, and we'll talk about determination, but just so I'm clear, you're not riding the Fifth Circuit horse where the Fifth Circuit says, well, yeah, sure, it says a determination, but there are core determinations and peripheral determinations. You're just, you're willing to agree that a single determination does the trick.
Yes, so long as we interpret determination correctly.
Okay.
And I think determination is the act of determining something. It's not just some sort of general framework to evaluating the state implementation plans, but it's the specific reasons that the EPA relied on to deny Alabama's plan. And so I guess 2 points there. One is that the action that we're talking about has to be the denial of Alabama's specific state implementation plan, and that the determination are the specific reasons that the EPA denied those plans. And I think if you look at the Federal Register notice, EPA lays out those reasons, and they're all state-specific. It's that EPA did not agree with our use of the one part per billion screening threshold. It didn't agree with our weight of the evidence analysis. It didn't
Didn't the EPA, right or wrong on the merits, have a nationwide standard that it applied to all of these states?
Your Honor, I think it applied a nationwide framework, but in a very different way than Hunt Refining, for instance, in which it was a national economic theory which was one size fits all. In that case, no refineries were eligible for the hardship exemption because of the way that the national economy worked in the trading budgets. Here, EPA says, and I direct your attention to pages 9354 and 9355 of the Federal Register notice, it goes through specifically the reasons that it denied Alabama's state implementation plan.
Yeah, EPA is always going to apply the same standard to state implementation plans, right? It's always going to apply federal law that governs all of these things. The determination is what has to be of nationwide scope, right? Not the standard that EPA applies to make the determination.
That's precisely right. And I think under EPA's reading, it would swallow the rule. And we know that the second bucket of local or regional applications, the EPA's actions on a state implementation plan, this court in Hunt Refining recognized, that's the prototypical local or regional application. And all of those actions, of course, as you just said, Judge Brasher, those are applying national frameworks. And I'd also point out that the EPA is happy to say that its SIP approvals are local and should be challenged in the local or regional circuit. And even though it applied that same four-step framework that applied to ours, it's only when it comes to the SIP disapprovals that EPA says a different rule applies and the exception kicks in. I think that's inconsistent.
Can you give him a couple of more minutes, please, so he can address the merits?
Thank you, Your Honor. So turning quickly to the merits, The Clean Air Act recognizes that it's the states who have the primary authority in combating air pollution. It's the states that take the lead in creating a state implementation plan. And that word primary has to mean something other than mere sequencing, which is what EPA says in the Federal Register notice, that it's not simply under the act that states get to go first. It's that states are in the driver's seat, and EPA is not in the driver's seat. And I think EME Homer, which is the primary case EPA relies on to evaluate or to rely on its four-part framework, which EPA says is, quote, a policy judgment, and that's at 9337 of the Register notice. EME Homer says, yeah, EPA can rely on those policy judgments when it's in the driver's seat, when it's creating a federal implementation plan. But, of course, the EPA only creates the federal plan when it steps into the shoes of the state because the state had not created a plan or created an inadequate one. So whatever discretion the EPA has in creating the federal plan is exactly the same discretion that the states have in creating a state plan.
I guess I still, though, maybe took the underlying logic of EME Homer to support the EPA's position here, and you can tell me how sort of why I've got this wrong. But doesn't the court in EME Homer say, look, we recognize this creates practical difficulties for the states, specifically with respect to this good neighbor provision, because the EPA might come back behind you and kind of pull the rug out from underneath you and say, well, yeah, sort of what you thought was going to be a good enough measurement turns out isn't. Isn't that the practical difficulty the court was talking about? And that seems to be exactly what you're complaining about here. And the court and EME Homer seem to sort of say like, yeah.
Well, I think EME Homer says, you know, the EPA doesn't have to provide the thresholds beforehand or the modeling data beforehand. But the gist of the ruling was in reviewing the federal plan and what discretion the EPA has in creating that plan. And our argument is simply that the states have that same amount of discretion in creating the state plan, and that the EPA's role is ministerial. I don't mean that it doesn't look at to determine whether the plan is adequate. I simply mean that under K3, the Act says that the EPA shall approve the state plan if it meets the requirements of the Act. There's no discretion left with EPA, and certainly not to the extent that it has in creating the federal plan. Unless there are any further questions, we ask that the court vacate the SIP denial.
Thank you very much.
Please, the court, Grady Moore for the industry petitioners. Very quickly, Judge Jordan, I think there's a difference on the venue issue between a nationwide policy and a nationwide determination. And I think that'll answer your questions there. For example, if EPA...
Those two things have overlap, do they not?
No, I think one is the yardstick and one is the measurement. And I guess in the same sense that a yardstick may have overlap with what you write down as what you measured, they may have some overlap, but that's my distinction.
If you set a policy, and you set a policy that says, you know, X per million, and that's your nationwide policy.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then you disapprove the submissions of 20 states because they don't hit that benchmark. That is both a policy and a determination, is it not?
If that's what EPA had done, I might agree with you, but that's not what they did.
I'm not trying to discuss this case with you.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to understand terminology.
All right.
I'm not sure.
So my question to you is, yeah, are there times when policy and determination overlap?
I would again say that if someone is calling that unrebuttable position a policy, it's not a policy.
No, I'm not calling it anything. I want the hypothetical I gave. What is it?
That's a determination that this number, unrebuttably, is the definition of a significant contribution. That might be a nationwide determination.
Okay.
That's not our case. All right, I would like to quickly
address Judge Brasher.
I just wanted to follow up on his hypothetical because I think the way I understood your argument was that they can set a nationwide policy. So the nationwide policy may be, you know, one parts per billion is wrong and shouldn't be used, but they're still evaluating a specific plan to make a determination about whether that plan satisfies the nationwide policy. And that determination would still be a state-specific determination, right, about whether this particular plan satisfies the nationwide policy.
Yeah, completely accurate. And also, in the situation like here, where the policy is articulated as being rebuttable, if you come forward with some explanation that satisfies the government, then that's clearly still policy and not a determination. The determination is as what you just articulated.
So hold on, just so I'm clear, the determination is the approval or disapproval of the SIP?
No, that's the action.
That's what I thought. Okay, yes. So that's the action. And what's the determination?
The determination in this case is that that Alabama did not come forward with sufficient additional justification to overcome EPA's policy for the one part per billion, for example, or that the weight of evidence analysis didn't overcome EPA's modeling. So that's the determination, both of which are state specific and would have no opportunity for real review in some consolidated case in the DC Circuit, just frankly.
What would, just so I understand, if determinations are uniformly in service of an action that is state-specific, what determinations would have nationwide scope or effect?
Well, one that's not rebuttable. So the in the Hunt case, I understood the court to find that EPA had said, look, we've made a decision about that, what means, what the economics are for those RINs. And once they made that determination about whether the RINs were economic or not, by whatever method they applied, that was the end of the inquiry. And now you measure now, okay, you know, where was your RIN? In this case, they just have a policy that they say, look, you can have an alternate framework as long as you meet our non-statutory standards for rebutting what we prefer in our four-step method.
So the reason in your view why, for instance, the choice of a particular model, 2016 V3 or whatever, is not a determination is because it's rebuttable? Like, I mean, why isn't that a determination?
Right.
EPA says, hey, we're going to use this model. Across the board, we're going to use this model.
Yeah, no, our opinion would be that cannot constitute a determination of nationwide scope and effect when it's something that on a state-by-state basis you could rebut it.
Rebut it or satisfy it, just so
either one. Yeah, okay. Those are similar terms to me.
But I mean, I guess
satisfy it or rebut it, but I don't know.
But if EPA says we're going to use the 2016 V3, I hope I've got my terminology right. We're going to use that across the board. Why isn't that a determination of nationwide scope or effect? And now, whether or not you can satisfy it, that's going to be determinative of your action. But why isn't that determination to use that nationwide, that model nationwide, why isn't that a qualifying determination?
I think there has to be a difference between a determination that's substantive and some procedural approach they're going to take to evaluating
these SIPs. But in his hypothetical, it is substantive.
Well, they've chosen
a standard.
They disclaim that they made any determination, for example, as to whether or not the PSD program is relevant for judging the one part per billion screening threshold. So they say, we've made no determination on that. So I think it more squarely fits in the concept of they've got maybe nationwide policies. And if you get away from that, then clearly they can at any time say, look, we're applying nationwide consistent judgments here. If that means that they can always go to the D.C. Circuit, then the exception swallows the rule, as my colleague pointed out. And I'm trying to explain a pathway where that can't be the case and distinguishing between nationwide policies and nationwide determinations. And here, this action was based on state-specific determinations, yes, applying their nationwide policy, but still state-specific determinations. And I'm almost out of time, but I would like, if it's okay, just a couple of minutes to go over the actual
errors. You're over time, but you can have a couple of minutes.
I'm over time. I'm sorry. Yeah, I misread that. I apologize, okay. Judge. Yes. Okay, very quickly, and I don't know if you want to give me a certain amount, but I'll try to make it very quick.
You can give him 2 minutes, too.
EPA definitely erred here in three ways, state specifically, that we want review on. That's the one part per billion analysis, the weight of evidence analysis, and even applying their own method, the cost effectiveness test. On the one part per billion issue, the PSD program prohibits contributions. Okay, EPA says one part per billion is an acceptable screening level for that program, but then they insist on some lower number to screen for significant contributions in the Good Neighbor Plan. Well, I mean, that's backwards, obviously. It's clearly at least consistent with the Act. Those are both compared to the same 70 part per billion standard, same one. Significant has to have some meaning. Even EPA's own legal memorandum says so.
What helps you on the merits, may it hurt you on the venue?
I don't think so here, Your Honor, and I understand your question. I think that these errors are
You're suggesting that it set a baseline that is inconsistent with its statutory mandate and authority, and that
it had a
if
policy,
you don't satisfy that mandate, you can't make it. But that sort of suggests...
Understood. That can get close. I don't think we're on the wrong side of the line here. Well, let me say this then. What they did say was we have a policy of wanting substantial justification and compelling evidence to justify one part per billion. That was provided to them. They wanted to ignore it because it was provided by industry first. And otherwise, they just say, well, that's against our current policy. That's their words. But the Wyoming case says, look, you can't disapprove something. This is in the Regional Circuit, Wyoming, saying you can't disapprove a SIP just based on non-binding guidance. The weight of evidence analysis was complete. It really called out for weight of evidence here because the only thing consistent about all of EPA's modeling runs was that Alabama had the least impact of any of the disapproved states. It's not disputed. Always modeled below one part per billion, averaged less than 0.7. So the weight of evidence analysis says, look, let's look at the big picture. Alabama looked at a bunch of factors, all in the record, and said, we're not significantly contributing to ozone problems in Houston. Okay? EPA's response is, we didn't overcome our modeling. Okay, not a determination. They hadn't made a determination that the modeling is black and white. That's the answer. They just said you didn't overcome it. But that's really a red herring because all the weight of evidence analysis does is weigh the various results the modeling spit out with all these other factors. Last one, the cost effectiveness analysis. You're right.
I apologize. I'll sit down
and save that for my rebuttal.
Okay.
Appreciate it, Your Honor.
Mr. Lind.
Good morning, Your Honors. Albert Lind for the United States. I am joined by Rosemary Caban and Daniel Schramm at council table from EPA. May it please the court. Today's case is about EPA's congressionally vested responsibility to ensure that all states can attain the 2015 ozone standards.
And let's talk about venue.
Yes, Your Honor.
Tell me the easiest, from your perspective, determination of nationwide scope that the EPA made here.
Yes, the EPA determined that a 1% contribution threshold is an appropriate contribution threshold because it actually screens out de minimis contributions and ensures that upwind states that produce more than de minimis contributions are captured. It also determined that a 1% PPB contribution threshold was appropriate because that would actually ensure that the 2015 ozone standard is not any less stringent than the 2008 or even the earlier 1997 ozone standard. So that is one of the many determinations of nationwide scope or effect that EPA made in its disapproval. You can find other determinations in Section 5 of the preamble.
Let me press you on that one, because the way I understood your brief and also reading the final denial is you said that a state could present evidence to use something other than the one part, the I guess 0.7 parts per billion, the 1%. So how could that be a nationwide determination if you're allowing states to present evidence to use something other than that.
Certainly, Your Honor. I would say that that's a corollary determination that states have to provide adequate technical justification in order to support their use of a 1 ppb contribution threshold.
Yeah, no, if you're getting that, if that's a nationwide determination, then it's hard for me to imagine anything that the EPA is doing when it's revaluating a SIP plan that's not a nationwide determination, because the standards that you use to evaluate are always going to apply to all the plans, right?
I would not say that they would always apply to all the states, but
okay. Well, can you give me an example of something that you would apply, and it wouldn't be it just apply to like one specific state or something? I just don't even know what that would be.
Certainly, under the Clean Air Act, there are actually certain provisions for the PSD program, which is the regional haze program that is comparable to the Good Neighbor program here, where EPA and Congress recognize that certain western states can be held to a slightly different standard than all of the other states.
Oh, so it would be like a specific regionally applicable standard.
Exactly. That is okay. A more regionally applicable determination. That is not the case here. So going back to the venue issue more broadly, I do want to return to the point that EPA's determination here is actually nationally applicable. And this court's recent decision in Hunt is squarely on point.
Would it be nationally applicable if EPA had said that Alabama's SIP plan satisfied the standard?
I would say it would depend on the context in which EPA made that determination.
Why would that be if the determination that it fails to satisfy the nationwide standard is a nationwide determination, a determination of nationwide effect? Then how would the opposite ever be true? It seems like what you're saying is that just applying the standard and determining whether you satisfy or fail the standard is always going to go to the D.C. Circuit.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Perhaps I misunderstood your question. So the approval itself may be nationally applicable depending on how it is packaged. An approval can also still be based on determinations of nationwide scope or effect. In fact, EPA recently determined that its approval of Wyoming's SIP submission was based on determinations of nationwide scope or effect.
Okay.
So going back to the issue of national applicability, the venue issues for today's case are virtually indistinguishable from those from Hunt Refining, which this court determined belonged in the D.C. Circuit. In that case, this court reiterated that whether an EPA action is based on determinations of nationwide scope or effect is contingent on the nature of EPA's actions, not the specifics of the petitioner's grievances. And in that case, EPA denied hardship exemptions for 105 refineries located in 18 states, 7 EPA regions, and 8 judicial circuits. This court recognized that because those actions applied across the country, they are nationally applicable. This court further explained that the actions were nationally applicable because EPA based the denials on a statutory interpretation and analytical framework that it applied to each and every single refinery, regardless of where they were located or what market they operated in. The facts regarding the disapproval are similar. The disapproval on its face applies to 21 states in 8 EPA regions and 10 judicial circuits. As this court recognized in Hunt, these are strong indicators of national applicability.
Yeah, but in Hunt, we specifically said this is not a state implementation plan, right? I mean, we had that paragraph in there that said, you know, unlike a state implementation plan, et cetera. So I guess, given that language in Hunt, how can you apply the reasoning in Hunt to the denial of a state implementation plan?
I understand that concern, Judge Brasher, but I would not actually read into that paragraph that state implementation plans are necessarily locally or regionally applicable. I think that court was simply writing that out to not address the merits of today's case.
This is the language that we said. I mean, I just think it's a problem. It says, it talks about the Texas and Kentucky opinions, which are state implementation plans on the same issue. Mm-hmm. And it says, unlike those two denial actions, the ones before us in this case do not involve SIP approvals or disapprovals. And as discussed, unlike those two denial actions, the ones before us in this case were not based on any individual refinery specific circumstances or concerns. I guess that language, unlike those two denial actions, to me suggests that we actually said in this opinion that we agreed with Texas and Kentucky.
Well, I would say that in Hunt, this court actually rejected the argument that looking at state-specific plans is any different than really looking at refinery-specific circumstances. Because in Hunt, petitioners actually raised the argument that EPA's evaluation of those individuals' refinery-specific circumstances necessarily rendered the denials to be locally or regionally applicable actions. But this court actually rejected that argument because what happened there was, while it's true that EPA did look at those specific circumstances, EPA ultimately determined that those circumstances did not undermine its overarching analysis or conclusions. That is exactly what happened here, Your Honors. Yes, EPA looked at the specifics of each state's individual SIP submission, but ultimately, it determined that those specifics did not undermine its overarching analysis or conclusions. And for that reason, Hunt is still applicable here, even though there is that one paragraph carve-out. Your Honors, on the other hand, even if this court determines that SIP submissions, SIP reviews, constitute locally or regionally applicable actions, such actions still have to be challenged in the D.C. Circuit if they are based on determinations of nationwide scope or effect. And EPA makes a corresponding finding. And both of those factors are satisfied in today's case. EPA stated in its preamble that the disapproval was based on determinations of nationwide scope or effect. And if you look at the petitioner's arguments, they do indeed have nationwide scope or effect. As this court recognized in Hunt, a determination of nationwide scope or effect can take the form of, quote, a new universally applicable approach. Here, EPA identified many new universally applicable approaches in deciding how to proceed in reviewing the state's SIP submissions. As we just discussed, the 1% contribution threshold was one of those determinations. Another determination was that the PS Prevention of Significant Deterioration Program's 1 ppb significant impact level does not actually justify the use of a 1 ppb contribution threshold under the Good Neighbor Program.
And just on this issue, and I read the Fourth Circuit's opinion on this, and I guess it seems like the motivating kind of issue there is just this problem of if you're always applying a nationwide sort of law, you're always applying nationwide law, you're almost always applying some kind of nationwide, nationally applicable standard, it just seems like the exception, which this is an exception, you know, you can normally challenge, just normally be able to challenge the SIP disapproval or approval in the local circuit, that it just really swallows the rule. And the one example you were able to give me would be if there's like some regulation that applies just to like a group of Western states, that would be something that you could challenge in a local circuit. That just seems unsatisfactory. I mean, what if we adopt your reasoning, what is left for local circuits to do?
I understand that concern, Your Honor, but this is a two-part test. So first, there do have to actually be determinations of nationwide scope or effect.
Right.
And EPA has to make a corresponding finding and publication. And so EPA has not abused its discretion in exercising that authority, as this case really absolutely
illustrates. I think I'm understanding your answer to be the thing for local circuits to do would just be if EPA doesn't make that determination or makes that determination arbitrary and capriciously or something. Is that what you're saying?
I think in short, yes.
Okay.
Can I ask you one quick question? This may be remedial. Does the statute draw a distinction for venue purposes between approvals of implementation plans and disapprovals? I thought I read the statute to say that challenges to approvals automatically go to the regional circuit. Is that right?
So, not entirely, Your Honor. You are correct that the statute does actually identify that approvals and promulgations of implementation plans fall under the bucket of locally or regionally applicable actions. But even then, those actions, depending on what they are based on, could still be based on determinations of nationwide scope or effect, which would have to be challenged and addressed in the D.C. Circuit. So, as I was saying, the PSD program, EPA did determine that the PSD program's 1 ppb significant impact level doesn't justify using a 1 ppb contribution threshold under the Good Neighbor Program.
You're just running out of time. I feel like we spent a lot of time on the venue. I just wanted to be able to get to the merits of this. And it seems like, to me, reading these other circuit opinions and reading the briefs, it seems like the strongest merits position, and maybe I'm wrong about this, for the petitioners is about the 1 ppb issue, and specifically about the, I think it was in August, it was either April or August of 2018 guidance that suggested they could use that. And then your final rule says they can't use it. So would you just address that issue?
Sure. I would note that the August 2018 threshold memo actually explained that in order to use a 1 ppb contribution threshold, states actually have to provide adequate technical justification in order to support the use of that threshold. And looking at Alabama's SIP submission, which appears, and their analysis, which appears on Appendix 228 through 229, 246, and 273 to 317, they do not provide any technical justification to support their use of a 1 ppb contribution threshold.
I guess here's I don't understand a lot about this case, but one thing that I definitely don't understand is what technical justification would one provide to use a screening threshold, right? Because it's not, you're not saying, you know, this is just the screening threshold. So what, give me an explanation of like what kind of material a state would say, this is why we're going to use the one parts per billion screening threshold instead of some other screening threshold.
Sure. If we look at the threshold memo itself, there's also EPA's proposed approval of Iowa's SIP submission, which it ultimately withdrew. EPA explained in those circumstances that you would have to look at how much contribution or how many emissions are captured or would be looked at under the 1% threshold, and how many emissions and contributions would be looked at under the 1 ppb threshold. And EPA explained that if those two numbers were comparable, let's say less than 7%, then that would be potentially adequate justification for the use of a 1 ppb contribution threshold.
So just I just want to make sure I understand this. So you're saying you would basically run your analysis under both thresholds, and then if they're about the same, then that would justify you using the 1 parts per billion threshold.
If there is not significant loss of captured emissions.
Has EPA approved any state implementation plans that use the 1 parts per billion threshold?
No, EPA has not.
Okay.
But to return to the point I was about to make, Your Honors, if you look at industry petitioners' own comments, they recognize that using a 1 ppb contribution threshold would actually result in significant losses of contribution. In one case, 11%, and another case, 30%.
Yeah,
so they don't actually.
This just goes to why I guess I'm just having trouble understanding it. But if the point of the one parts per billion versus something else is as a screener, you use that to determine whether you need to go through the other analysis. It seems like what you're suggesting is the only way to use the one parts per billion is to actually use the other screening, and then prove that it just doesn't matter which screening that you use. That seems very odd to me.
You would have to demonstrate that the losses are comparable, yes. I don't know that I would necessarily say that they would have to run the modeling themselves, because EPA did provide the 2016 V2 and 2016 V3 modeling data for them to compare against. So okay. I see that I have 10 seconds left on the clock, so
Your opponent's got some extra time. Would you like some?
I think I'm okay, Your Honors, quite frankly. For these reasons, we would ask that the court lift its stay and transfer this case to the D.C. Circuit. But if it should decide to reach the merits of today's case instead, we ask that you deny petitioners' petitions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Roy.
Thank you. Watch my clock better. Sorry, Your Honor.
That's okay. No need to apologize.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. First, real quickly, yes, the one part per billion memo did support, with analysis that EPA provided using one part per billion, they already provided the analysis that should have been necessary. And then the petitioners, both the state and the industry petitioners, provided separate state-specific analysis to support that.
Where was that? Where is that?
Yeah, I can give you that site.
Was that you submitted a 2018 SIP, and then there was some additional submission?
Yeah, it was in the 2022 SIP.
It was in the 2022.
It was in the package that was sent to EPA for this SIP, and then Alabama itself submitted it in their disapproval comments also.
Okay.
So it was in both places. I heard my colleague say they haven't approved any SIPs for one part per billion or more. Complicated answer, but you should look at the Oregon SIP approval. Oregon is over one part per billion for California. That's at 87 Federal Register 20075, just for your reference. Picking up on all of that, though, that's why this debate over the screening threshold, the appropriate screening threshold, that's just a screening threshold anyway, meant to prompt maybe further questions. So that's why Alabama did the weight of evidence analysis in the first place. Alabama's consistently regarded to have very low effects on any Texas receptor. And even EPA's own analysis says that the issue's temporary anyway, goes away by 2026 on its own. So on that basis, Alabama went to the ultimate question, what is significant contribution here? Take the model into account, okay, 0.7, one part per billion, we think we're right about one part per billion, but whatever the screening level is, let's look at the whole picture, that's what they did. Two quick responses that I heard in the discussion on venue. The disapprovals applying the same four-step approach, which we call the policy, nationwide policy, were all issued in Federal Register notices that EPA said should be appealed to the local circuit. I said disapprovals, didn't I? The approvals, maybe you knew what I meant, the approvals in this case for the other states that fell below EPA's modeling cutoffs that met their policy were all to be appealed in the local circuits. And we can't make sense of how those are not subject to some nationwide determination and ours are.
Like Judge Brasher, there's a lot I don't understand about this case. But if you have, again, I want to make sure you understand that this hypothetical is not tied to this case. It's an attempt for me to try to understand what's going on beneath the surface. If you have a minimum threshold, whatever that threshold is, and then you have criteria above it, so you have to meet X. If you don't meet X, you're done. But if you meet X, you still have to go through a couple of extra hurdles, X plus one, X plus two, X plus three, right?
Okay.
If you satisfy X, but fail on one, two, or three, that may have to go to the local regional circuit because the ultimate determination by EPA is not based on a nationwide standard. But if you don't get to X plus one, X plus two, X plus three, because you don't satisfy X, is that nationwide?
That could be.
Okay.
But I think ours is the first case. The way we understand it is that they said, look, the screening test says you need to give us more. So we did, and they have their reasons for rejecting it that we think are arbitrary and capricious.
But maybe that's why the approvals go to the regional circuit, because if they say X, and in addition, X plus one, X plus two, X plus three, and you satisfy all of those, then the approval is not based on a nationwide determination. You've surpassed the nationwide threshold. Now you're into the peculiarities and particularities of your own special situation.
Can I respond? I'm sorry.
Of course.
Thank you. I see your point, but I would say that Sierra Club or someone else may come and say, look, this is still just a screening threshold, and we think you should go the other direction for the particular circumstances with this state, and we're going to challenge the approval. You have a nationwide policy of applying one part per billion or whatever it is, but there are state-specific factors that undermine your action to approve that SIP in this case. So I do think it goes both directions, and I don't think the distinction holds water. And EPA didn't make their finding properly in this case anyway. As we point out, they're not allowed to dictate venue. I think I heard my colleague say that, but that's a de novo decision that you have to make, and their finding is just circular here.
All right. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.